Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea. Today I'm joined by Miles Downey to talk about his book, The Sessions, A Tale of Leadership and Dublin Pops. Miles is a lifelong student of performance and leadership and executive coach. He's a sought-after, engaging and inspirational conference speaker and a four times author. His books include the seminal and best-selling Effective Modern Coaching and Enabling Genius. The Sessions is the first fiction title by Miles set in 1987 Dublin, with tales of Victorian pops and of an emerging leader who is beset by doubt, rejection, deceit, and downright foul play. Hi, Miles. It's a great pleasure to have you back on the Lit Radio podcast. I'm very excited to talk with you about your new book, but this time it's even more exciting because it's your first fiction book. But first of all, well, how are you?
Very well, and I'm thrilled to be talking about this book. So, yes.
Yeah, me too. So why did you decide to write it, to write the book, The Sessions?
Well, it was a long time ago, and we'll probably talk about that. So it's been cooking for quite a while. And originally, I was trying to find a different way of talking about coaching that wasn't academic and wasn't overly kind of almost practical or gritty. That I wanted to get something to do, something that was inspiring, that was different, that rather than being specific and telling you this is how it's done, it kind of points to how it should be done, rather than being explicit. And what I was hoping that would be that would be more engaging for people. So that's where the idea of initially just showing the conversations between two people, and then the idea came, oh, hold on, let's put them in an interesting scenario and have an interesting story. And what I realized was quite quickly was that it wasn't interesting enough. And so then over the years with other things, it's changed and it's become more about potential and more about leadership and much less about the coaching. So the coaching is very, very much in the background. It's much more about potential, genius. So yeah, but it was a different way of providing a lesson without ramming the lesson down somebody's throat.
Yeah, very interesting. Is that why you decided to write the book as fiction after having written so many nonfiction books?
Precisely that. And it also gives it, it also means that wrapping a story around it was another way of engaging people. And frankly, having fun. I mean, the real reason I wrote the book was because I had the idea and I wanted to do it. It's taken me a long time, but it turned out to be just really rewarding to do this thing. So I would have done this book even if nobody had published it.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a passion project for you.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah. Great. And obviously, the writing process was probably a bit different compared to your other books. So could you talk to us a little bit about that? What was it like to write The Sessions?
So I had to start. The thing that I knew that I could do is I spend my life talking to people and hearing what they're saying. So I think I'm quite good at the dialogue bit because that's what I deal in day to day. I hear that all the time. I'm paying attention to what people say. So I had an inkling that maybe that bit wouldn't be too difficult. I also knew that I had the structure of a coaching conversation to help me. And then the difficulty became, so how do you string it all together? And coming up with a story and a storyline. So, you know, about a business that's failing, that a bit like kind of it's a hero's journey model, which says, you know, the guy is presented with this situation and he's reluctant to engage, the central character, Porrick. And it's his story about then having to engage and growing and developing. So it was all of those things were kind of just learning to structure, learning to. And then the thing, as I got into it, one of the things that I'm interested in is that mental state of flow. So where people are almost working in an almost unconscious way. Actually, it's hyper-conscious because you're You're completely present, but all the rest of the world disappears. And I found that I could get into that place, and without much thought, I would be able to write. And that was when it became most fun, because I found myself writing jokes without, well, some people might not say they were jokes, but they kind of emerged rather than being constructed. And that was amazing, just to watch as my fingers type stuff. I would say, where is this coming from? So I got into quite a high state of flow towards the end of the writing.
Well, that sounds really great. And earlier on, you told us that this book has been in the making for a long time. So how long did it take from the initial idea?
Oh, I first had the idea, oh God, in 1995. And in fact, I pretty much wrote the first two chapters then. And of course, they've been edited multiple times since then. And then I every now and again, I'd take it up and I'd have a look. And I felt good about the first two chapters, but it just, I didn't know how to take it forward. And it wasn't until, I think it was in 2016, that we published Enabling Genius, which is about how you exploit your potential and express that in the world, which was, I love to rewrite the book at one level because it's not brilliantly written, but the core ideas are good. And somewhere along the way, I realized that actually the sessions was the best vehicle to tell that story about people's potential and how to use that and express that in the world. So and literally I finished the book in May of last year. So I think that's probably must hold some kind of record for the book's longest in gestation. But it was waiting for it was only about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, that I really knew what the book was about.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you really needed to go through those other books to finally get to that flow state.
I think you're right. It's kind of like, it's yes, you're exactly right. It's pulling together all of the stuff that I know, all the stuff I know about coaching and mentoring, all the stuff I know about leadership, because I've coached leaders in big, big organizations. And then all the stuff I know about potential and being in flow and all of that, because of the mental side of sport is a big thing for me. So yes, it all came together.
Fascinating. And so what I find really interesting about the book is that you chose Dublin, which is your hometown, homestay, but Dublin in 1987 as a setting for the plot for the book. So why did you choose that?
The answer is almost because that's when I started writing it, which obviously isn't true, but it's almost that far ago. That was, so 1987 was actually the year that I left Dublin to come and learn about the inner game and develop thoughts and practices in coaching. So it was the last time that I lived in Dublin. And one of the editors along the way, I referred to the fact that I had actually initially placed it in 1986. And a wonderful editor in Ireland noted that our central character Porrig takes a flight to New York, to Seattle at some point in a Boeing 747. And he did some research and he found that they didn't start flying until 1987. So 1986 wasn't going to work. So I changed the year. But it was. So it's what we haven't said already, which is one of the features of the book, is that it's an exploration of the city of Dublin, the Victorian city of Dublin, the Georgian city of Dublin, and the Victorian pubs within that, and how they come to be what they are, and the famous pubs and the clientele and the way conversation happens in those very specific establishments. And so that it was like, that was just a great setting. And the time I knew them, those pubs, was in my kind of mid-20s, 87 being the last year. So it was, and that gave me some distance, because of course the pubs, I fictionalized them, because I can't, in the sense that it's the details of the pubs and who was there, whatever kind of clientele they had, I've had to kind of make that up. And I'm sure there'll be people very cross at me for kind of misrepresenting something, but that kind of distance means that nobody can really challenge me about the things that I've got wrong about the pubs, ownership, why they are the way they are, how you pull a pint of Guinness, you know, all those good things.
Absolutely. Yeah, I find that very interesting, obviously, because we work with nonfiction books, and obviously you're telling me about, well, that Boeing story. I mean, yeah, you still with fiction, you have to be very careful about your facts.
But in a completely different way. I
Yeah.
was, yeah. So there is a statement right at the beginning of the book saying these pubs are, are drawn from my memory. I mean, they're real. I'm an amateur artist, very, very, very amateur, and I've drawn sketches of all the pubs, and so they're real. They are all real places that I've spent far too much time in my youth. But the way I describe them then comes from my memory, and therefore they're distorted memories.
Yeah.
Distorted by Guinness mostly, but anyway.
Yeah, but still good memories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, and then could you tell us a bit more about the story in the book, the story that the book tells, and also the main character?
So the story happens at kind of three different levels. One part of that is that it is an unfolding of somebody's potential, that they're, as I said, the hero's journey. They are presented with a challenge. The firm, the business for which they work, and kind of a very small IT business in Dublin, is in trouble. And the question is, does this guy just walk away from it, or does he help turn it round? And in order to turn it round, he has to become the leader of the business. And there's an American parent company that at this point has bought it out, and he has to get permission for it. So he has a number of battles along the way. So there's that story of his about his leadership and his potential. Then there's the story about the business itself and how that business is saved from being consumed by a larger American organization, so it can retain its unique Irish creativity, the culture, and then there's a story that gets kind of, or a theme in it that it doesn't get referred to at all, which is, of course, there are two people in this. There's Porrick, our central character, and a man who never gets described. He's clearly older, very experienced, and he's a kind of a mentor and guide. So what you're seeing in the way the conversations happen is that coaching, mentoring, guiding from a very experienced mentor. So there's these three levels going through it, and the fun of it is that there are challenges that our friend has to confront, and that means once or twice going deep inside, and issues of integrity and compassion come to the fore.
Yeah. And could you tell us a little bit about the lessons, the leadership lessons that you cover in the book? What kind of things readers can learn about, even though it's fiction?
Yeah, and I hope that it's almost easier to absorb the lessons, because they're not, as I said, rammed down your throat. They're there, and people will therefore construe them in their own way and take them on board, if they do at all, in their own way. So one of them is that we're kind of brought up in our society not to trust ourselves, and that's going to become increasingly true with things like AI, where it's no longer a search engine, it's an answer engine. So you're beginning to lose the capacity to think, and that's going to be a significant problem. And then other institutions of society, religion. I can, as a former Irish Catholic, I'm still Irish, but not the latter. Some of those institutions, they require you to be compliant. So there's a huge thing in society which is about not trusting yourself, not trusting your intuition. If you can't have a rational explanation, no, there's intuition, there's instinct, there's feelings, there's so the first thing is to trust yourself. That and that the second lesson will clarify what I mean by that. But it's actually to understand that we get in our own way. We get there's inter mental interference, fear and doubt, and the first step is to move beyond that. And allow yourself to you reduce that interference, more of your potential becomes available. So that kind of takes me to the second one, because potential is a really almost overused word. And when you say that to somebody, it kind of it flutters past their head and just doesn't land. So I've started with the Enabling Genius book talking about genius, which really upsets some people because they say, well, can't say that person's a genius. And hold on, who said? And why is it there are only two people that were allowed called a genius, Einstein and Mozart? And why is it that they're both dead and both men? I mean, it just doesn't add up. So the notion of genius, as I express it in this, potential genius, your genius is the embodiment of your potential. So once you make that real, then you've got something you can play with. So I work very hard to help leaders understand who they are as a leader. What is being expressed in that moment that's unique to you? So you have a unique individual genius as a leader. So the second thing is, this is about help. The book is about how you realize potential, how you realize your genius, how expressing that genius. So when I say self-expression, I don't mean something kind of, you know, lighthearted and woo-wah. I mean, very seriously, understanding who you are and expressing that in the world. And then, in a way, the third lesson potentially is that it's kind of difficult to say this and have it be held to be, it's about enabling other people. So, you know, what Porig, our friend, does is he's going to start leading a larger and larger organization as this thing happens, as the story unfolds. And he learns quite quickly that he can't control everything. And in fact, the more he gives away, the more space he has to think and the happier everybody else is. But we live in a world that's increasingly about control and power and authority and that's happening on the big stage, and it's increasingly without compassion and understanding. So what the third lesson is about the enabling of others and how that comes with compassion and understanding, and actually there's profit in that. It's not, you're not just doing it because, you know, you're a good person. You are doing it because you're a good person, but you also know that in coming from that place with the intention to enable others, to help other people explore their genius and be themselves, results accrue for them, for you, for the organization. And that's a lesson that is in danger of being significantly lost in a compassionless world where you just have to start thinking about how people think about immigration and all of these issues, and you begin to see what I'm talking about at that scale. So there's another message. Sounds terribly worthy.
No, it's all right, but I think it's very valid and important. But a big role in the development of Podrick in the book plays those sessions he has with that person he meets in the pub. And here comes the question, what role does coaching play in the development of leaders?
I Warren Bennis, who was a big thinker and leader around topics of leadership, he said that many years ago, he said that the process of becoming a leader is essentially the same as the process of becoming oneself. And that goes back to my definition of genius as well. But you can't do that in a vacuum. And the exploration of who you are and how that plays out in the world is deeply personal and private and hidden even from ourselves. So coaching helps people become more aware. So Tim Galway, the author of The Inner Game of Tennis, had a wonderful expression which says that awareness is curative. So the very act of becoming more aware of something causes that thing to alter, shift, change. So the really good coaching brings awareness, brings the light of awareness to something and allows people to make better choices than they would have done anyway. And so, you know, when I sit with a leader in a business, help them understand who they are, what's that going to be expressed like in the business? What are the strategies that begin to emerge from that? How they take care? If that's all buzzing around in their head at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's no good to anybody. So it's got to get out of your head and be expressed and become a commitment. And then I can hold that person to account to their own commitment. And so I know of no more powerful way at all of helping people step into their shoes as leaders and perform than coaching. There's a caveat there. There's a lot of very bad coaching out in the world. There are people who are completely unqualified to do it. and who have some very strange notions about what it is. So if you are going to look for a coach, make sure that you get somebody who actually knows what they're talking about and has some business experience around it.
Yeah, I think that's very important
Yeah.
tip. But yeah, I absolutely agree with everything you said. But I would like now to go back to the setting of the pod, which is Dublin in 1987. So, I mean, the lessons that made your character successful in 1987 might not be the same or valid for today's world, or is that not the case?
Well, so, okay, the book, it's a great question. And the answer may be rather simplistic, which is that while the book is positioned, place, time, in that time, the nature of their conversation isn't. So actually, I've been in the world of business coaching for more than 30 years, and I've coached pretty much across the world. I've coached in some extraordinarily prestigious, well-known organizations, and I've coached right at the top and all the way down through those organizations. So I'd have to have been really stupid, which there are some people who would argue, that not to have picked up significant understandings about what it's like. And they're current. They're the things that I work with people today on. So in fact, positioning the aeroplanes that were flying, the way Dublin was in those days, because it's changed radically since then, is 1987. The lessons are today.
Fascinating. And Miles, who do you think will find this book useful?
So there's a very clear audience in my mind. I know so many people who've got who are in, you know, organizations of all sizes and shapes and industries, and they're given positions of leadership, and I'm talking not just management, but this is true too, but also leadership, and they've had no training. So what are they doing? They're doing what they think they should do. They're doing what other people have modeled to them, but there's no consciousness around it. And even those people who've had a little bit of training to get them started, very soon that kind of filters out. Well, speaking with a guy who is responsible for leadership development in a huge European company, and he pointed out that, you know, most of the development budget goes on the top 10% of the people in the business. So what? It's aimed at people who've had some leadership experience, because that's the target market. You've been in a role for a number of years, and you're probably getting a bit stale. You've probably never really thought about how you lead and what impact you can have and what fun you might have and what fulfillment might come. So that's what, but then because it's a novel, I'm hoping that it goes beyond that, that I want the messages about trusting yourself and about potential and about all of those things to extend. So I can imagine that people who would never pick up a book on leadership, picking up this book, and kind of that's the intent. If I hit, you know, I know the population who've read my previous books. And if I get a different population in, I think that'll be almost the biggest victory.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, Marius, I think the book has the potential. As you said, it's a novel, so it's interesting to read.
And it's small. It's a novella. Yeah, yeah.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do hope as well that we can reach that other audience apart from the senior leaders. To finish this very interesting conversation, what's next for this book?
So I'm eternally grateful to Lyd for publishing it, because it doesn't fit in, you know, with in your very specific market, which is fantastic. And when Martin, your CEO, saw that there was a potential of using this in a way that was kind of, you know, as we've just said, but reaching different audiences, that was really exciting. So I then have in my small little village in Norfolk a friend who is a very, very talented music producer, and he felt that he'd like to help me create the audiobook. So we've got an audiobook coming out in probably March, And he's had great fun researching Dublin pubs and the sounds of glasses clinking and what the kinds of buses that were driving on the streets of Dublin in 1987. And he's when we put that together. And then all going well, there'll be another hard copy coming out probably June, depending on how sales go. And then obviously I'm really, really hoping to be able to take this message out into the kind of the seminar conference world, podcasts and whatever else. So yeah, you got to a point very quickly early on in the conversation about this. This is almost a culmination of 30 something years of inquiry, learning, being a student of performance, leadership, whatever, and trying to encapsulate it in a very tight way. So hoping it goes far.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do hope so for the same thing. I just want to say about the audio book, because again, this is a bit different from the other audio books we've worked with, because we are going to have those special sound effects, which is going to make the audio book even more interesting. So I'm also looking forward to listening to that. Also, looking forward to everything that's going to come with the book. But thank you very much, Miles, for your time today. I really enjoyed this conversation about the sessions, and I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the ebook, which is now available, and read more. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Taya. You've been wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.